This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is... you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I a couple of things to moan about before we start.
Okay.
So I want to moan about Nick first.
Yeah.
So you got the email about the club saying make sure that your season ticket is all working in your wallet and stuff.
Yeah,
and mine wasn't, so I had to re-download it. No problem. His wasn't either. So you know, he did that like old relative thing of like, oh, can you help me with the IT, please? Can you fix the IT? So I saw it and I said, like, you got the same problem as me. We need to remove it and then add it back into your wallet.
Yeah.
Except when he went to add it back into his wallet, he was pressing the add it to wallet and nothing was happening. So he sort of left the pub and then just went on a rant of telling everyone that I was a fucking dick for ruining his. ruining his ticket. And I was like, but it didn't work a minute ago. It still said Wolves. Like, just go to the box office and get it sorted. Anyway, after the game, smiling, oh, sorted it. I was like, oh, did you? Where's my apology, Nick? Where's my apology?
I mean, that literally is the life of an IT person, isn't it? Where everyone decides that it's something technical or computer related. Therefore, it's your responsibility to fix it, even though it's not working already. If you don't fix it immediately, or the thing you suggest doesn't work, that is your fault.
Yeah,
and you are personally responsible for it. I witness it a lot. One of the most recent things that happened, so my partner was being contacted by somebody to attend a meeting to help run a slide deck. So that is, you know, somebody in tier two IT support who's being asked to run a slide deck because the person thinks...
Press right on the PowerPoint.
Yeah, it's like literally like, well, okay. that just, again, you're not there to do that, are you? It's unbelievable.
Well, I've done it plenty of times when I worked in schools.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one more terrible bit of tech news from the Twitter comments as well. We asked people to comment on the game. Leif Anderson's forehead. Have you seen my earbuds? I lost them yesterday, gutted. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Leif Anderson's forehead's earbuds.
Yeah, you're not finding them again, I'm afraid.
No, sorry, man.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Okay, hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest match report, episode 12 by my reckoning. Southampton at home, the last home game before the big old break for the World Cup. My name is Mike and joining us are the aforementioned key finder, Christopher Hamblin.
Hello.
And Patrick O'Connor.
Good evening, how are you?
Yes, all good. I'm glad that we're discussing a win. I imagine at least three people bothered to sit through last week's 3-0 defeat discussion, although we did get to hear from your son, who had an excellent debut. Were you a proud dad, Patrick?
I actually really was. The funniest thing was one, having someone, I guess, in the chat say he sounds just like me. and then a friend of mine, Stan from Toronto, saying, was that your son on the pod? I'm like, he did say he was my son, didn't he? He goes, oh, yeah. So that was funny. Yeah.
Yeah, he said it a couple of times. Yeah, I didn't think he sounded that much like you.
We don't.
So,
we really don't. But it's funny people like Mikey thought that. Anyway.
Yeah, just you both have a slight American twinge, and that's about it.
His more.
His much more. You'll be disgusted. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Let's get started. Just before that, say, we've got a fairly new website. If you haven't been over there yet, it's an excellent hub for. You probably subscribe to the pods already if you listen to this, but it's a great hub for getting into the YouTube videos. Just simply find which one's the newest one, click on those. You can leave us some comments as well. So please do. If you want to go old school and leave an email, you know, a proper ranting email rather than a Twitter comment, then please do. backofthenest.com. And also you can subscribe to us via all manner of platforms on there, and I would ask, if you're going to do that, give us a nice review on iTunes, that kind of thing. It really does help. There's about 5 million Crystal Palace podcasts these days. Just tell people that we are at least your second favourite. So let's just cover Palace news today. On the day of recording, Palace women went all the way up to Durham and very thankfully won 1-0. Anna Fibley, the central defender, scoring the only goal of the game just before half time. They're up to fourth in the table after 7 games, so the table's looking a little bit healthier. Yes, Durham are bottom, but they haven't been doing that badly recently. So, you know, it's a really good trip. There's some photos up on the women's Twitter page. Everyone looks real happy after the game. So excellent stuff. And the under-18s, they drew 2-2 against, the last couple of years, High Flyers Fulham. Goals from Hindolo Mustafa and Caleb, I can never pronounce his name.
Kapora.
Do you reckon it's Kapora? Yeah. So all round, 3 goals from defenders in those 2 games. So interesting. But yeah, 2-2, were 1-0 down and then 2-1 up. But I think that's a pretty solid point. And that keeps them in second, still an absolute mile off West Ham, who look like they're not going to drop a point this season. But that's all good. And just in other Palace news, I'm absolutely not a boxing fan. I don't know about you guys. Are you a boxing fan, Patrick?
Not even a little bit anymore. No, I don't watch it that much anymore now.
I liked it when Frank Bruno was the thing, you know. It's good back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's just about the time I watched Formula One as well. Martin Brundle.
Yeah. Nigel Mansell, maybe.
Yeah.
Those are the good old days of sport. I don't know why you bother anymore.
Good old days of computer games as well. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, Ellie Scotney has the super bantamweight title holder right now. As of yesterday, on the day of recording, she was prepping before the game in a Palace shirt with her own name on the back. Very cool. Great stuff. So that might actually get me slightly interested in a little bit of boxing for a little while. Good stuff there. And I know that made a lot of people very happy on Palace Twitter. And the other thing, just wanted to bring up, obviously brought it up the last show as well, but we've actually saw now the tribute to Saido. Neither of you were on the pod last week, so I was just going to ask for your Saido memories, both of you. Buying a program, whatever you did. So, Chris.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a really sad thing first and foremost, because you know it's one of the first things I remember when I probably first went to Palace, because I was very young, and I think my first ever Palace game was at Wembley. God, I'm such a sellout. But like, you know, even my first visit to Selhurst, I was too young to really pay attention. And then there was a long gap between me going a few times as a kid, and then literally I, you know, got a season ticket, right, and I was there every game. But he was one of the first people I can, you know, club representatives, if you like, because, you know, the programme sellers, they are that. I think he was the first program seller I saw, and the first thing I, you know, really stuck in my mind is, you know, he looked moody as hell. He had these massive sideburns and, like, very quickly heard people calling him Sido and stuff. And then it was, I noticed he had a little feature on homesdale.net website, which was my first foray into online Palace as well, where, you know, it was Ask Sido. And it was just a funny little thing. You type a question into Sido and he pretty much gave you the same answer every time in this little graphic. Sort of like, so he was one of those things that was, I think, one of those people, one of those characters, like, you just valued so much. He was part of Palace. I didn't know Clive personally. You know, I bought programs off him. I watched him walk along the bottom of the Homesdale, you know, seeing if anyone wanted a program, and you'd get the glare or you'd get a nod or you'd get something. And it was just, you know, he stuck out so much. And you just, after like a year of going, it was just, you expected to see him and you expected to see him there forever. So then his programs, and you know, when he had the stroke, you know, a few years back and wasn't there anymore, you know, it was a real sad thing then. And, you know, obviously the sad news that he'd passed away, it does feel like, you know, part of the club, part of that past, that identity that where we came from is now gone. But, you know, so many people will remember him till their last breaths. He was just a proper old school character and someone I think the club have rightly been proud to be associated with and have given a really fitting tribute for.
Yeah, that's a lovely tribute. I could never quite work out if he was actually really pissed off at people shouting at him. and I suspect he probably slightly was.
Definitely some days, for sure.
Patrick, any memories?
Actually, I mean, I started going to Palace in the early 70s because my brother was a ball boy. But my brother was a ball boy in the Whitehorse Lane end. So I'm pretty sure, I'd left in 79, 80, and I'm pretty sure that I probably never bumped into him until I went back like in the 90s and saw him there. But again, all the stories I heard about him, he did seem a bit moody, but he was a great character. I mean, like I said, and I was a big program collector, still kind of am. So I bought a few off of him, but I don't really have like a particular memory. But because I've been going for a very long time and I had that little gap when I came to America, so I missed him for a bit. But I definitely remember buying programs from him. But again, I was in the other end until I got a little bit older.
I mean, we can all be accused of being a bit moody, so let's definitely not hold that against him. Right, well, let's get to the match. Obviously, the match that saw a beautiful tribute to him up on the big screen from the HF, which I didn't get to see because it was so crowded with random people that weren't part of E Block. I couldn't get to my fucking seat in the second half.
Really?
So I stood in D Block. Oh, wow. immensely annoying the woman behind me who obviously couldn't see. Yes, but anyway, other than that, let's talk about it. So we heard, well, some of us heard from some sources beforehand in the Goat House that Doucouré wasn't playing again. So the lineup, the kind of, I can only describe it as like a central midfield three. So my sort of thought was just trying to replace Doucouré by sheer numbers. But it seemed to be very effective.
Yeah, it was different, wasn't it? Because, you know, the previous game, we clearly against Everton, the whole Doucouré left was just massive. So as soon as you saw the team sheet, you're just like, oh, well, this is just yet again us having not enough options. But that was absolutely the right choice to have Schlupp in there with Luka and just have them as a two. And even, as you quite rightly pointed out, Mineza was asked to play perhaps even a little bit deeper than he would usually prefer until we got a bit of momentum up and he started wandering a bit. But we look more solid in the midfield. But I think, I'm sure we'll talk about this a lot. I know Patrick and I were talking during the game, but the difference for me between, you know, last time out and this time was the performance from Luka. You know, Schlupp did a good job and, you know, Eze did a good job, but, you know, the sharpness was there from Luka for the first time I think, in a long, long time. I think first time this season, without any question. And I'm struggling to remember a time last season where, you know, he reached that level of performance. He trailed off a little in the second half, for sure. But, you know, as a first half performance, the first 45 minutes, that was the Luka of old. That was the Luka that, you know, screened the back four in an incredibly impressive way for a long period of time, where Kabay was sort of, you know, the not quite box to box, you know what I mean, but was the kind of one who roamed and did a bit of playmaking as well as putting a challenge in here and there. So he kind of had Eze and Schlupp doing a bit of that himself. And it just felt a little bit like the sharpness that had been missing for so long was there in his passing. He didn't get caught on the ball too much. He played the simple passes. He didn't try and turn when he couldn't turn. And I think that's where he's been weak. He's been receiving the ball to feet with his sort of facing the wrong way, and he's always trying to turn. And I think, I don't know if someone's had a word and said, look, you know, just pop the ball around. You've got two ball playing centre backs behind you. You know, use them, then turn. You know, don't try and turn first, you know. And it's a little, just a subtle change like that, I think, had a real impact on his game.
Yeah, great point, Amber. And I think one of the things I noticed is that he got off to a really good start. So beginning of the match, Southampton has an early throw in and then a corner kick, and he's involved in breaking up both of those sets of play. And then Wilf drives the other side, gets fouled at the edge of the box, takes a free kick, doesn't score, but has a free kick. A few minutes later after that, Schlupp makes a great run, cuts inside, crosses the ball. Luka has a great shot in his block. So he's off to a really good start in the match. I think that kind of built his confidence. But you're absolutely right. He kept it very simple. He drove the ball forward. He was very involved in our press yesterday. And again, considering he's not Doucouré, he really did a really good job of filling in for him. And I think, honestly, going forward, I thought about this with D today on the YouTube show, I think it might not be a bad idea to start Doucouré and Luka next week because of the fact that they will both be involved in tackling. I think the problem we've been having lately is that you can't have Doucouré be the only tackler, and Luka will obviously be a part of that. So hopefully that might be something that might happen next weekend.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to ask. Was Luka effective because he was in a 2-3 rather than being isolated? And how much of it was... It seemed like Southampton, if I have a criticism of Southampton, I would say that they hadn't quite done their homework and didn't seem to realise that a quick break against, well, particularly down Joel Ward's side, seemed to be effective for other teams, and they weren't doing that. So did Luka have an easier time of it because he had players around him? Did he also have an easier time of it because Southampton didn't seem to be exploiting the way that other teams have in the last few weeks?
I think there's definitely an element of that, because to some degree you get that with Southampton. In fact, in terms of the way, you know, Hasan Hüttl wants to play, you know, he does want them to be a kind of slow building side, you know, possession based, which, you know, when you look at the end game stats, they actually, after the second half in particular, they shaded the possession. Well, I think they were like 55-45 with the possession. So they did kind of dominate the possession of the ball through the course of the 90. And you're right, that to a degree was a weakness in them. They chose not to change their game to exploit our weaknesses. And that did play into our hands to some degree. And when they were forced to change it up and break with pace and put an overload on in the flanks, where people have had so much success, none more so than Everton, you know, that's when we started to look a little bit creaky and you know, relied on Guaita a couple of times for sure. But yeah, and again, in the fullback areas in particular, we, you know, the fullbacks often in our team, depending on who we've picked, can be left a little exposed and easily bypassed with a couple of passes. They tuck in narrow at times, but more so Ward. But they also get, you know, caught in possession a lot. So I think that when that was exploited, you know, we could see exactly what Southampton probably did wrong in the first place. So very, very astute point there, Mike.
Yeah, and to follow up to that, it's interesting that prior to last week's match, Hasan Hüttl used a 4-4-2. But I commented, as I mentioned, he went to a 3-5-2 yesterday, which he used yesterday. So he had Perot wide left, and he had El Yunusi wide right. And I remember early in the match, Perot did a great run and just left Ward in the dust. And I was like, oh my God. And then after that, they didn't really try.
Was that for the offsides hitting the post?
It might have been that one. It might have been earlier, but I know one. Yeah, I think it might have been when Che Adam hit the post and then got the offside. Correct, Mike. But it was weird that they didn't try that. And you would think that, you know, knowing hopefully knowing or thinking they would know, our weakness is our fullbacks. But I also think that tactically, pushing Ward and Mitchell higher up, which they both got involved yesterday, probably negated Perot and El Yunus' ability to get forward. So from that standpoint, Vieira probably did a good job at that. But I'm really surprised they stuck with that 4-4-2, because honestly, I mean, the 3-5-2, it didn't work for them yesterday. It was really tactically poor by Hasenhüttl yesterday.
It did feel that way. But when I watched the extended highlights back to, you know, just to remind myself of the big points, actually, it's up in the White Horse Lane end, so you don't quite get that heart-stopping moment from the Homesdale. But we were really lucky to not concede in the second half. Ward's after match interview, you know, he said we were probably unlucky to not add two or three in the first half. But that leads me on to what I wanted to talk about. He'd said, Grierson had asked him what they'd worked on after the Everton game, which is a reasonable question, if not a little bit taxing for straight after the game. But he said that they'd really worked on the interplay in the wide areas because they felt like they weren't doing enough with it. So that could very much tie in with what you were just saying. And then on top of that, Vieira was still fairly cutting after the game. You know, he said there was a lot of positives, but he's disappointed in the finishing from the side. And watching the highlights back, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. There's some decent chances, but really should have been more than 1-0 up.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I think we would, it's totally fair to point out that Southampton had some very good chances, but you know, we were a little wasteful, particularly first half in terms of the opportunities that we had. So in that sense, it was probably a good performance. But yeah, Ward talking about, you know, what they worked on, that interplay of wide players, wasn't it? So I don't know how much I really saw, you know, you've asked the question in the doc there, what was different? And I don't know if I really saw too much different. And I think we saw Edward, I think, interacting a little bit more, particularly with Olise. I thought, you know, I think Vieira spoke about it after the game, to be fair to him. And you know, he was saying that, you know, he's starting to kind of do that work between the lines as well. And that's really important work, you know, because I think we all understand that Edward's a better footballer and a better striker than Mateta. But where Mateta was getting the nod before was he was, you know, causing a hassle, and he was acting as a kind of fulcrum for other attacking players as well as getting on the end of things to score a goal here and there. But Edward's really kind of started to interact with those wider forwards, be it Olise or Ayew on the right and usually Zaha on the left. So I suppose there was evidence of some work there, but I think, you know, the real difference in the performance was in the midfield, in my view. So, you know, but I suppose, you know, Ward can only answer the question that's in front of him.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I want to put something to you, Patrick. I'm not going to give a name away, but somebody from this parish, in the Glaziers after the game, we'd settled down for a nice pint of San Miguel. I was enjoying it up until they said that Edward is incredibly frustrating because he seems to only want to lay the ball off rather than shooting. So, thoughts on that, Patrick? Absolute load of crap.
Can I skip that question, please?
You absolutely can if you want to. Or you can just totally agree if you want to.
Answering the question seriously, I'm sure you guys are aware of the D and my going back and forth between Mateta and Edward. So, I have totally gone to the point where I said at the beginning of the season, if you get everyone to run a game, see what he can do. And he's proven me that he can score, proven, you know, D's all over, he's the best striker we've ever had, on the top 6 strikers in the league, etc., etc. I honestly think that he's got a lot about him that I do like. I think there are times when he will hold on to the ball too much. Have you ever seen him play for Celtic? He was able to beat like 3-4 players in his SPL and score goals like he was for fun. He just did that. He can't do it in the Premier League. So whoever that person was, by the way, I kind of agree, But having said that, I think he's actually proven to be a very good goal scorer. If you give him the opportunities, which Dee's always said to me, give him the chances, he'll score. And I think his link-up play with Olise and Eze and Wolf and even Mitchell has come a long way. He could have had a hat-trick yesterday. I mean, he missed that first chance. Wolf put a great ball across. He scored the goal. And then he had the offside VAR goal. So, I mean, honestly, he's this close to a hat-trick yesterday. So he's coming along. He's coming along.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it wasn't him. It was offside as well. So
Exactly.
What I will say is, I think it was the first time I'd seen a post-match interview with him. He didn't give a lot away. he didn't say a lot. So I'm not gonna. Not a lot to add to that. But what I did want to talk about, Vieira. He slightly sidetracked somebody that asked him a question by saying that he thought the Palace still started poorly again. And considering at half time, you know, we were all very upbeat standing outside the Homesdale, saying it was a great half. He'd said that he still thought the first 10 minutes were poor. And then obviously he was relatively negative about the amount of chances conceded in the second. So whilst we've been talking about only coming alive in the second half, that seemed to be the opposite. So I don't know how much that is Southampton tactics and how much it is just trying to do the opposite of what happened in the Everton game. Is there anything to add to that, or is it just, you know, coincidence at this point?
Let's go with coincidence.
I'm beginning to think that that's the case. I am beginning to think that's the case. I mean, it's very, you know, is it not the first time I think we've won this season and been ahead? It's to say that they've improved on defending, and they certainly, you know, towards the end, excellent game management.
That's a really good point. I mean, it was pleasing, wasn't it? Right?
Yeah.
We started doing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. And I don't like to see too much of what you call kind of the darker arts of players going down and, you know, just taking that little bit longer to get up from a little knock here and there. But we did a much, much better job of disrupting play. And there's nothing wrong with doing that, like, to a reasonable level, because you get the same thing back at you all the time. Right. And, you know, one of those things can be a criticism levelled at Palace under Vieira to some degree, in that at times we are very focused on the football, which is a great thing to be. But, you know, if you start losing out, or, you know, giving away points or giving poor starts away to poor teams, and then, you know, a fantastic case in point is I still don't think Everton are a very good side at all. I really don't.
I agree.
And they blew us away, and they did the really horrible, shitty things well. You know, they were really aggressive with us. They were a lot, you know, there's a lot to be said for running around really quickly and putting people under pressure. And sometimes we do a little bit, you know, Vieira doesn't compromise on that style, and it gets us exposed sometimes. And I would rather be in that position than I would in some of the previous positions under previous squads and managers and stuff like that. So I'm not going to, you know, going to go on about it. But I think there's a lot of different moving parts, but I like to see us putting a bit of the sort of dark arts into play.
And I have to say that, you know, two players in particular do a real good job of helping close out matches, and that's Ayew, who can draw a foul and keep the ball in the corner, and then Hughes. I love what Hughes did yesterday. Hughes is a very, very smart player when it comes to, you know, closing out matches. He'll bring the ball out wide. He will play a pass that you know, we keep the ball. He'll also make a tactical foul if he has to, which he did yesterday. I just love the fact that, you know, those two players in particular do a really good job. And Gyro against the Minnesota State was great. But I have to give credit to Vieira. You know, we've criticized him in the past, or people have criticized him in the past about how, why you're making that sub and that cost us the match. But of late, he's done a really good job of making the right subs at the right time late in matches to help us close out matches or even come back and from behind in some cases and win.
Yeah, he obviously really, really trusts Hughes to do that job as well, which is good to see. Also wanted to say briefly about the comments he made about the amount of black managers in the game at the moment, and huge props to him for coming forward and saying that although the percentage is supposedly higher amongst professional managers than the amount that they put forward, which was 10%, he said that the percentage isn't high enough. So a great amount of respect for him on that. Feel free to cover that in a moment, but I'll ask you another question at the same time. Somebody in the show doc has wanted to discuss Tyrick Mitchell, better defensively and obviously created the goal. And then, you know, Ward had a good game as well. So let's talk a little bit about the fullbacks, left and right backs, whatever you want to call them in the game. Patrick?
I've been questioning a lot of late Tyrick. I'm not sure if what's wrong with him has been, you know, the post-England call-up, whatever that is, as far as when the player seems to lose form, or him being injured and us not addressing it by playing somebody else. But got to give him a lot of credit yesterday. He did really, really well yesterday. It's the Tyrick that we need. He's defensively very, very solid. That kid that came on, he dozed him a little bit of trouble at the end, but prior to that, he did really well. The cross for the goal was really, really good. He was doing really well going forward. And on the other side, Wardy, again, I mentioned before, just him getting forward a lot, linking up with Olise, was massive. Again, he's not the right back that we need. We all understand that. I mean, whether it's Klein, Ferguson, Wan-Bissaka at some point, or somebody, but you got to give the man credit yesterday. Again, at 33 on his birthday, he played really, you know, he was very solid in his role. And, you know, I'm always quick to criticize him, and others are, some more than me actually, but got to give him credit. Both of them yesterday did a good job, and you had to have them play that way yesterday, because Southampton, again, like Everton, I don't think are a very good side, but they can cause you problems, especially out wide with the 3-5-2. And to their credit, Mitchell and Ward yesterday were very, very solid.
Yeah, and to hold my hands up, Patrick, I'm one that's probably more critical of Ward than you are.
I didn't mean to say that, by the way. But
No. But I think it's a valid point. Look, Tyrick was very good. And I thought the article from The Athletic, I think it was Matt Williamson's article, was very, you know, apt in its timing to kind of talk about the personality that Mitchell has. And when you think about the criticism, or at least, you know, dampening of praise that's come, you know, his way, to point out that actually he would be way ahead of the curve on that. He'll be very much in his own head about his own performances. It was nice to see him to put in a display like that. I think he's sometimes, because he's, you know, he came in the way he did and his rise was so quick, I think sometimes people watching, and also maybe the players on the pitch with him, kind of forget that he does still need the occasional bit of sort of coaching about where to be while on the pitch, and that's going forward as well as covering back. And I think, you know, again, the observation in that article was absolutely true. You know, he doesn't always have the right cover in front of him, and it does create indecision. You know, he doesn't, you know, when we see the end results on, you know, goals or chances down that side, sometimes we look at it in isolation and we go, okay, Tyrick's lost his man there. You know, he should have followed him. But it's about, you know, it can be like a minute earlier on that problem starts. And that problem starts from indecision as to where to go, to stay with the player with the ball or drop off and either go narrow or follow another player out wide. It's that moment there, because he knows, you know, Wilf's not going to sprint to get back every time. You know, and Ward gets that same thing the other side. And, you know, so I'll come back to Ward in a sec. But Tyrick did all of those things a lot better. But I do think there was probably an argument to say that the inclusion of Schlupp in the middle alongside Luca and gave a little bit more cover out wide, because both would kind of drift out into the wide areas defensively as well. It just was a more solid setup, if you like. Ward always does a decent job, you know. But I think the point I made a few weeks back in a unplanned return of Hambling's Ramblings was, I think we do at times allow the wonderful sort of amount of time, energy, effort, and just general loyalty and amazingness that Ward has brought over a decade at Palace. We do sometimes allow that to cloud our judgment in some ways, as much as we also allow preconceptions to maybe, you know, be more critical than we should. So it's really hard for me to kind of find the exact right balance, because Ward did all the things right that I expect Joel Ward to do, you know, which is put his body on the line for the team, give it, you know, proper focus and attention for 90 minutes and just do a great job where in an area where he was comfortable. But you pointed out earlier, Patrick, you know, Southampton missed a trick in not isolating him out wide and making him run back, because that's where he's weak. He doesn't stop enough crosses. And at Premier League level, you know, he's still the player that you kind of least want the ball to be knocked back to when you're putting a move together. You know, I can't help but get away with it. I almost sink in my seat when I see the ball knocked back to Wardy, and I shouldn't feel that way. But you know, I feel like if he's going to put a cross in, it's not going to be dangerous. I feel like if he's going to, you know, go on the overlap, it's not really going to go anywhere. And I just feel like if he's got the ball at the start of a move and we knock it back to him from midfield, it's going to go up the line in a relatively aimless way. And I'm probably being unfair. I probably remember those things that I expect, and I probably ignore the positive things that he does. But, you know, it's a really long way of saying he played really well, and fair play to him, but we definitely need to replace him as quick as possible.
Yeah, all fair points, I think. Lead us on to, just to wrap up, I just want to first mention the Southampton kit, which was just absolutely fucking horrific. One of the worst kits I've ever seen at Selhurst. So that's my first point. Southampton fans, they were quiet, but then not a great deal to cheer about. Did chat to some lovely gents in the Green Dragon afterwards. You know, they're never the loudest lot anyway, I don't think. But you know, not a great deal for them to cheer about. That's as a result of Palace playing really well. So I wanted to ask, who were your standout players for the game? And to point out that the regular, or hopefully regular, segment on YouTube will be Patrick covering his player ratings. So make sure you go onto YouTube. But yeah, start with you, Patrick. Your top player for the game.
Immediately after the game, I wanted to give it to Luca, because I was a pretty big Luka fan. This is a little political, so I hope it doesn't get blanked out by Mikey. I was a big fan of Luka, and then he made those actions during COVID, and he came out for Djokovic with, and I kind of went off of him. And then his play fell off, and then it was easy to go off of him. But I've also tried to be fair, so I really think that he's taken a lot of stick this season, most of it fairly, but some of it, or not this season, over the last two seasons, some of it fairly, some of it just wanted to get on his case. And I thought yesterday, again, he played really, really well. But as I said to D today during the player ratings, I always want to give credit to a goalkeeper who saves, makes big saves in a win. And I thought Guaita yesterday made some brilliant saves on Che Adams. I know one of Armstrong's shots hit the post. But even like in the last like minute or so, he came out of the box and he punched the ball out, which he's very rarely does. He's very passive as a, you know, crosses, when crosses come in. So having said all that, I'm giving it to Guaita, because again, I was a little down on him last week. I thought against everything he was really poor on that parried second goal to Gordon. So having said all that, I would give it to Guaita. I thought he played really well yesterday when we needed him to.
Yeah, I think you've probably just said exactly what I was going to say. I was going to go Luka, but rewatching the save where it almost went under his body and he managed to cling onto it.
Yeah.
So strong, so strong. Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo a lot of that. And you know, big saves. And I know, going a long way back, Patrick and I used to talk about that a lot with certain other keepers.
Yes,
where,
indeed.
You know, you'd be watching the opposition keeper and saying, look, they're making the big saves. We're never getting any. No, you got average, but average doesn't cut it if you're not making the big saves now and then. You a save that's as good as a goal kind of thing. And we definitely get that with Vicente. And you know, we haven't seen the best of him for, you know, for a little while now. And I thought that was very much his best and it should be recognised and a real welcome return, because that competition has got to be hotting up a little bit. You know, Johnson's a good keeper. He really is. And Butland, I think, is back fit, or at least getting there. So that competition's hotting up, I'm sure. And he's got to be absolutely on it to keep that number one shirt. And that's absolutely as it should be. I just also want to mention the centre-backs, though, Mark Gay and Joachim Anderson.
Anderson, yeah, we've not mentioned him at all, have we?
No, we haven't. But, I mean, Anderson's sort of usual pinpoint accuracy wasn't quite there. And I thought that's one thing Southampton did pretty well. They were clearly drilled in looking for the long diagonals and didn't give us a lot of opportunities there. But I thought Gay in particular was read the game so well. And, you know, right at the death, he put in a wonderful challenge. And he played with a sort of a bit of a swagger as well. Kind of like if you go back to the sort of championship days when I think Ramage and Delaney in particular had a partnership for a while where they did this sort of joke thing, I think Ramage told us about, where it was like none shall pass kind of thing. And that was their motto. And they just played like, you ain't getting past me. That's just what this is all about. And it felt a little bit like he had that swagger, like wherever it came from, probably hurting after the Everton game. He just seemed to act like, you know, no one is going to get the better of me. I'm not getting caught on the ball. I'm not going to be bodied off of it like Calvert-Lewin did. I'm just not having it. And I like that a lot. So he in particular was someone that I wanted to mention, although both did really well.
Well, it's telling then that gone for defensive midfielder, defenders, and then three votes for, well, as Vieira refers to him, Vince. Okay then. So let's get to some listener feedback and then we'll end the show, I think. So we'll go plenty of comments on Twitter as usual. I'll pass them over. I'll give one to each of you, just a quick few comments from each of you on these. So Chris Cava said, how many Our Fathers and Hail Marys does Tyrick Mitchell have for penance this Sunday?
None at all. There's no penance required. Obviously his previous penances have had the desired effect. So really good.
Yeah, I've got to say, I think it's got to be none this week, and he might still be making a few for last week, but he's more than made up for it. Patrick, I'm not even going to pretend that I can pronounce this, but at 802 MTHCHR, there's probably some amusing pronunciation there. I apologise. Your comedy has sailed over my head. But what is our ideal 11 to see out a game with 15 minutes left? I thought we did okay, especially when Hughes and Riedewald came together to solidify midfielders. So, as you said, but yeah, ideal 11 to see out a game, Patrick.
So, you packed the midfield. So, Guaita in goal, Mitchell left back, Klein right back, Gehee Anderson, Decore, Hughes, Luca, Wilf as an outlet. With Ayu out wide because he's good defensively, and I might put another midfielder there, probably Gyro back in there too. So Gyro, Luca, Decore, and Hughes like four. Pretty much what we did yesterday, except without Decore. That would work.
Yeah, you gotta say none shall pass would definitely definitely cover that. Yeah
exactly.
Yeah, a comment from one Nick Gussett. Does Mike work in IT, asking for a friend?
don't know where that came from.
No idea.
Unbelievable behaviour. Unpaid IT support. Unpaid IT support. Grumpy Dad, Chris. What is our best midfield combination? And was Lucas one man protest in support of Kouate, or is he trying to force a move?
I honestly didn't see a protest. So someone might have to tell me what that's about. But I suppose the question of what's our best midfield, it's a really tricky one, isn't it? Because I really like properly love that Patrick Vieira will pick a midfield of Doucouré, Elise, and Eze. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Because that's just ballsy, just to go out and do that. But it goes back to the days where, you know, you'd pick your team on the internet, and a lot of the kids would pick a team like that, and everyone would just go, "Look, come on, that team's going to get torn apart. They're all attacking. Doucouré can't do it all on his own." That's the kind of conversation we'd have back in the day, and it's. So it feels a little bit like, despite the fact that I think that's the best three that can play in those positions, I think to give the right balance to our team, I'd love to see Doucouré, Hughes and Eze. I really would. That feels to me like the selection that's missing. And it just, there must be reasons for it. You know, it just feels to me like it's too obvious a statement to be ignored. There must be something we don't know or something that we don't see in terms of how that setup would have to work. Apologies if you can hear the growling dog in the background. The cat's trying to steal her food, but these things happen.
Stop it, cat. It's naughty.
Yeah, Chris, just on that point, I really think we haven't seen it just because of the Hughes factor, which is basically he's been injured and he's been ill. I really believe that, and then Doucouré yesterday was apparently injured. I really believe that if when all three are 100% fit, he will pick that midfield. Whether it works or not, I have no idea. But I think he'll pick that midfield. I really do. Because right now, you just said it's our best option.
I just want to cover the Eze pronunciation drama. Because I noticed watching the highlights back on the Palace player that the commentator was referring to him as Eze again. And I had heard the allegation that he deliberately said his name wrong in that video thing to wind people up. So who knows?
I mean, it's quite funny if he did, but I'm going to carry on calling him Eze. I don't care.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Brilliant if he did.
Yes. Interesting. So Patrick from Pethos, with the lack of our squad depth and injuries, we're currently in the top 10. And I believe we still are even after the games today. Yeah. Mad. Yeah. Thoughts?
I think it's a testament to not only Vieira, but the players, because we really shouldn't be in the top 10 based on the squad that we have, because we clearly understand that we are three players short, two at the very least, meaning a right back that can function in Vieira's system and a midfield that can function in the system. The fact that we are 10th is unbelievable. I am very happy with that fact. I hope we can get to the World Cup break still 10th or higher with a berth still in the Carabao Cup. But again, to me, all credit goes to Vieira and the players, because we shouldn't really be this high.
Yeah, I mean, it's every chance. You know, Forrest got another battering at Arsenal, so we shall see.
God, they're terrible.
Yeah, well, but yeah, we're just getting 3 points away, isn't it? Yeah. So really, I should have swapped that question to the end, because it's quite upbeat. So maybe let's pretend that Mikey is going to edit that and put it at the end. And I won't ask Chris the last question, which is much more of a downer. So imagine this was the second to last question. Did anyone else notice that our energy levels in the second half dropped significantly, allowing Southampton to get a foothold in the game? Mm. Is this an issue? From Colin.
Well, I mean, in some ways, as much as that question is written from a very negative perspective, I don't think you need to answer it negatively. I think Vieira even addressed it in the post-match comments, where he talked about there's always going to be spells in a game where, you know, you don't have you don't get to dominate possession, you don't get to have it all your own way, and ideally a spell wouldn't last for the majority of the second half. But I think, you know, we have to accept that the way we sort of dominated in the first half meant that Southampton had to come out and do something different. And with the options everybody has now, it's very difficult to stop a team fundamentally changing something. It doesn't always work, but you know, Southampton just, they had to up the tempo. They had to take more risks. So for us to say our energy levels dropped, I don't think that they did. I think we were, you know, when you're effectively conceding possession of the ball, you have two choices, really. You can try and meet it with a huge amount of energy and start running around the pitch, and that will tire you out. Or you can conserve your energy and press in the right areas. And we aren't a press all over the pitch team. You know, we press areas of the pitch in the opposition half, and we do a lot of our pressing in our own half, which is a completely legitimate tactic. But I think, you know, we made the changes both tactically and in personnel that just allowed us to accept that the game had changed from the first half. And that in many ways, you could argue that's what's been missing in some of the performances this year. We haven't played the game. We've tried to do what I've moaned about for years, wanting to see. We've tried to, try to make sure our own play and our own influence made the game go the way we wanted it, rather than play the game that's in front of us. And, you know, I think you have to do a mixture of those two things. And I think this game in particular, second half, just showed that we had to. It was a really positive sign for me. It's not a negative thing that energy levels dropped off. It's a positive thing that we changed how we played, and we managed the game properly. Yes, we got a little bit of fortune in there, but that happens in every single game for every single team. There's always a moment where almost the flip of a coin will determine whether that game ends up going the way it should for you or it shouldn't. And, you know, I think we should praise the team for the second half, even though it was a weaker showing than the first.
Well, you've managed to turn that frown upside down there.
I did.
You?
Can I also, I really want to quickly mention that I thought one of the biggest factors in us winning that game was the performance of Lianco for them. He, playing at right back, I believe he's supposed to be a centre back.
Yeah, it's a bit of a prick, isn't he?
Yeah, he was awful. You know, he got caught for the goal that we scored, and you know, probably should have been sent off a couple of times over. But you know, he's apparently just known as Lianco, and I don't know why he isn't fully known as Lianco Evangelista Silveira Neves Vojinovic. I don't know why he doesn't go with that name.
Wow, that's a great name.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be able to assist you with that.
No, weird that, isn't it? Yeah, but he was poor.
Yeah, well, okay. That six-named person, worst player on the pitch. Let's leave it at that, shall we? Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening to the show, and thanks in particular to everyone who got in touch today. As always, we read absolutely everything. It helps us shape the show, helps us make discussion points, so always keep it coming. And as I say, if you can go onto iTunes, give us a nice rating, or just tell a Palace mate, that would be absolutely lovely. The preview team will be back with you in midweek to look ahead to Sunday's match against West Ham United, and then possibly just covering a little bit that outrageously long journey up in the League Cup to high-flying Newcastle as well. We'll work out how we're going to review that. Might have to review both of the last two games before the break in one go. But yes, we'll keep you up to date on that. And until then, thanks again for listening. Come on, you Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.